The hour of 10:15 have arrived. We'll call the House Tax Committee to order. Welcome, everybody, February 25th. So our agenda today, I'm looking at House File 4, and thank you for Representative Freiberg for the catch. Since there is a constitutional amendment involved in House File 4, this does need to go to rules. So the motion will be to, Representative Johnson, the motion will be to go to rules. We've discussed this bill quite thoroughly already, but kind of an agenda here, because I don't feel like coming in tonight, unless you want to. I'll be here with you if you want to. That's fine. Okay. So, Representative Hewitt moves the minutes of, let's see. That's not right. That's today.
Oh, wait. I can't.
February 20th.
Chair Davis, I would love to do that, but as you know, you excused me that day.
What was your excuse? Representative Stevenson moves the minutes of February 20th. Any additions or corrections? Thank you for saving me, Representative Stevenson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes for February 20th are passed. So what we're looking at today, members, is going for, we've already talked about the Johnson bill before, but I want a full vetting on it. I don't really want to cut anybody off. So we'll go probably till about 11:15, then we'll go to the Robbins bill after that, and the Robbins bill would be laid over for possible inclusion. And again, House File 4, Representative Johnson, if you want to join us at the table there. So Representative Johnson, welcome to your committee. Representative Johnson moves House File 4 be sent to the Rules Committee, but I want members to have all the time they need to talk about this. And so, Representative Johnson, if you could please just briefly present what your bill does. We've talked about, well, we had a pretty robust hearing on it previously, but we it wasn't ready to go in. And thanks, Representative Freiberg. We're going to get it to the right committee, hopefully, here. And so if you could please tell us what your bill does, then we'll open it right up for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, what this bill does, which is House File 4, is address the concerns and the comments that candidates heard at the door was the desire to get assistance with the high cost of living by making sure in the future surpluses that do exceed 105% of projected expenditures, expenditures that there would be an account created to refund, whether through property tax refunds or relief or...
Excuse me, Representative Johnson, I'm eating air here. Your motion should be right now to take it off the table as amended so we properly have it before us. So that's your motion. We're good to go.
That is my motion, sir.
Chair.
We laid it over.
Oh, we don't need to do that? Oh, it's okay. Thank you. Okay, please proceed. We're good.
Okay. So, as stated, it was basically the House file is to provide relief to taxpayers and when there is a surplus of 105% of projected expenditures. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for members? Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if this is a question for Representative Johnson or for you. The motion is to send to rules. The previous motion when we had this before was to send to Ways and Means, and we had a conversation in committee about it needing to go to Ways and Means and Rules. I just want clarity on the committee path, the intended committee path on this bill. You're intending to send it to Rules thereafter it will go to Ways and Means?
That's
or
what
is
I understand.
It going to Ways and or what's happening?
You got it. We wanted to get the rules part out because the constitutional amendment part, Representative Freiberg was correct on that. Not that I would ever question him in the first place, but he's right on that. Then the path would be to go, it needs to go to Ways and Means.
Okay.
After so, that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we'll go to Ways and Means after rules.
That's what I understand.
Would Representative Johnson confirm that for me, please?
Representative Johnson.
I'm never going to doubt the chair.
That's the correct answer.
Very good. Very good move. Okay. So with that, questions to the author. And just because we have till 11:15 doesn't mean we have to take till 11:15. Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, are you familiar with the? These are so hot. Are you familiar with the between the November forecast and the February forecast, the reserve funds that we have, the four of them?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. What was that?
Representative Youakim? Are you familiar with the reserve funds that we put money into between the November and the February forecast?
Mr. Chair, Representative, are you talking about the funds that were put in last session with the $3 billion set aside, or exactly which are you talking about?
Actually, there's four different funds, but one of that is the emergency fund. And then, so between the November and the February forecast, when there's surplus, it first has to go into the emergency fund, I believe, and then the rainy day fund. But there's also a third and fourth that have to do with our schools. So back over a decade ago, we were short of money. So instead of paying our schools the 90% the first year and the 10% cleanup the second year, we went all the way down to 64%, almost 60% that they got the first year, 40% the second year, and our districts had to take out high interest loans to pay that off. So we added that in as another pot of money that has to be paid off to get to that 90-10 again, and then also with the levy shifts. My real concern is if there is some surplus funds, that it's not only not gonna make it all through that flow of that account, but we're also facing an uncertain time globally with tariffs and other things that are affecting our budget. So what if, you know, we get those surplus funds in, but then the February forecast doesn't look as rosy and we start getting holes in our budget because of Fed's cutting off funds, what then? Do we end up dipping into our school districts' budgets again, making them take out high interest loans? Because that is 38% of our state budget. So my concern, and maybe to you, is have you thought about what happens if you send those checks out and then we run into a shortfall, and what happens to our school district budgets?
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative. When you had mentioned the, you said if you're concerned with the last forecast, which is the February one, correct? Of the two, you're concerned about the February one?
Representative Youakim.
Chair Davids, I'm concerned, yes. If we think the February forecast is looking great and it's fine and we have our rainy day funds, and then something, turn of events, like for instance, right now, 10% of our education budget comes from the feds. They're threatening to dismantle the U.S. Department of Education and stop payment on those funds. 80% goes into energy as federal dollars. We have other budgets that will get taxed if we lose that money. Then what happens when the budget isn't balanced again? The two biggest pots of money to look at, one of the biggest pots is our education fund. So what happens if we're short after those checks go out? What happens to our schools?
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative. I'd like to first start off that since we first presented this 2 weeks ago now, we have cubicles now, so I have an open door all the time. I have not had anybody stop me in the hallway or in the committees or ask any questions regarding this bill since that last opportunity. So I wish that would have happened. We could have had some more time to explore this. But what I would... the voters want is they want to have a vehicle or a way for surpluses to be returned to help them with the ever increasing price of cost of living. That's what this bill does. Now I feel that we will be able to figure out going forward the what ifs. What if this, what if that? That's what we're here for, and that's what we're put down here for voters to handle what if situations. So what this is to set in place a constitutional amendment so this would take care of most situations, majority of situations, and have in statute or in the Constitution that if there is a surplus, that the money is set up and there is a mechanism to give that money back to the taxpayers. So I believe we would be able to handle those situations going forward.
Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one final comment. Constitutional amendments don't have a lot of rooms for what ifs. So setting this up and not having that money there in case we do run into an event where we are losing a lot of our budget, depending on what happens with tariffs and the federal government, This doesn't give flexibility for whatevs, so thank you.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Representative Lee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just also want to share, I mean, this is a constitutional amendment, and so if the intention is to have voters make a decision at the ballot box, we should be having open discussions during committee time that are transparent so folks know exactly what they're voting for. And so we can have backdoor member discussions, but it's also really important that we use our committee time to vet the legislation before us. That's why I'd like to point us today to the fiscal note that has been completed. It's in member packets. And so I want to draw people's attention to page 10. This is a fiscal note that we've been waiting for, and I guess I don't know if this is a better question for the author or the fiscal staff, but is this what we'd consider a completed fiscal note?
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lee, yes, that is correct. It is a completed fiscal note by three agencies.
Okay. Representative Lee?
Thank you, Chair. I want to just point us to the assumptions in the fiscal note, and I note that it says, it is not clear who would implement the tax refunds or tax reductions mentioned in the bill. There is no language directing revenue to do anything in the bill or language that gives revenue authority to do anything. So I want to just make sure that we understand that, and also want to remind members, last week we had the tax commissioner before us who actually pointed out that it is Deed who cuts refund checks when you file your taxes and you get refunds from the state. And so looking through this fiscal note that, you know, staff has told us is completed, I'm kind of surprised that, you know, there isn't a note from Deed in here. I think I see there's a note from the Secretary of State, Department of Revenue, and MMB, but no Deed. And so I just would like to know if the author has thought about what kind of cost this would incur to Deed to cut all of these checks if this were to be implemented.
Okay, thank you, Representative Lee. I don't think Deed's cutting checks here. Ms. Templin? Am I incorrect on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lee, since this is a constitutional amendment, the enabling legislation is not, or the, if this constitutional amendment is approved by the voters, there would be enabling legislation that would provide direction as to which agency would be providing refunds or administrating the refunds and so on.
And thank you, but Ms. Templin, it'd be the Department of Revenue would be issuing the refunds. It depends.
Mr. Chair and members, the bill does not specify that yet. I believe okay. If it approved by the voters, that would be something for the legislature to determine.
Okay, Representative Lee, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you were out last week, and I think Vice Chair Joy was presiding, but I think staff can kind of re-forward those slides. This was something that I learned last week as well, that Commissioner Marcourt let us know that actually, you know, people mostly choose direct deposits for their refunds, but it is actually Deed that physically prints and cuts out the checks, and so there is a cost incurred there.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I will go back to the record and check that out. So, yeah. And normally it happens in situations where there's rebates or refunds. The legislature does appropriate money for whatever agency is doing that to do it. They don't just have to absorb it or eat the cost. So that comes a later time, because I think the last time we did some checks, we gave the department, $20 million to send them out or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Representative Lee.
Yeah, very good. Just wanted to point out that, you know, there may be other unintended fiscal consequences for HF4. Thank you.
And I appreciate that, and I will dig into that on the who's cutting the checks. Okay, Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question. So 2 years ago when we passed our budget, we deliberately set aside $3.7 billion of the surplus to be able to cover what was projected to be a deficit in the upcoming biennium. And as a result, our current baseline budget for the next biennium is more than balanced right now. So my question is, would the legislature have been allowed to retain that $3.7 billion to cover a projected deficit, or would that money have been required to be refunded to the taxpayers in a one-time refund if this were to pass?
Who are you directing that question to?
To the author.
Okay, I was thinking, I hope it's not me. Okay, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. I would like to bring in nonpartisan staff, if they are able to, because they were around when that was fund was established and what the rules and regulations were on that.
Mr. Klayman, to the Elkins question.
Mr. Chair and members, I think I would answer the question somewhat more generally, assuming the question is about how much of a projected surplus in a year under the terms of House File 4 could be appropriated or otherwise left to fund the budget reserve accounts. The bill would define the surplus that has to be set aside from the general fund as projected revenues that exceed 105% of projected expenditures. And so within that 5% window, the legislature could potentially either increase the budget reserve, the statutory appropriation, or allow, which gets filled after the priority allocations. And then there's a second, I forget the term of art for it, but there's a second calculation that's made, I think after the November forecast, where if there's any other surplus, a third of that would also go into the budget reserve. But under the operation of House File 4, that would only be, those transfers to the budget reserve would only be allowed within that 5% window of projected revenues over expenditures. So however much of that $3.7 billion fell into that window could be part of the budget reserve, but then everything over, again, hypothetically or theoretically, would then be part of the set-aside that couldn't be used for that purpose.
Purpose of Elkin?
Yeah, so Elkins. Follow up, Mr. Chair. Then, do you know roughly, not exactly, but just, you know, what 5%, how much that the 5% at current budget levels would have been able to be preserved for the purpose of covering the next deficit?
Will that be Ms. Templin? Yeah. No, you're fine. You're fine. Yeah.
Mr. Chair and representatives, 5% of $3.5 billion is $185 million.
Okay, Representative Elkins.
Thank you.
Okay, before we go on, we have some very important people here today. They're called FFA members. And I just saw Cannon Falls must not like the committee too much because they all left. home of the Mighty Bombers. But where are you folks from? Where?
Anoka-Hennepin.
They have farms in Hennepin, probably.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, I guess.
Yes, we
oh,
do.
Oh, they do. Okay. You learn things every day here. The folks over here.
They might be from District 37A, Rockford.
Rockford. Go Rockford. All right. What's your team name?
Of your high school.
Of the high school.
Lancers.
Lancers?
Oh, like our
mascot? Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, Rockford Rockets. That makes sense. Right. Okay. Rockets. Okay. Where were we here? Representative Smith is where we are.
Oh, I'm next. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, clarifying question. If my memory serves, we did pass an oral amendment during our first time we heard this, and it's not reflected in the bill text that I see here, specifically in line 2.2. And it is in the minutes that we approved that it was on there. So.
I thought we did that.
Yeah, but it doesn't say it has to be engrossed.
Well, not full
season.
Yeah, not engrossed.
Okay. Okay.
But we've done that.
We've done. I just want to clarify that and how we've done that.
Okay, Representative Smith.
So I just want to make sure that matched. Okay, thank you. My second question is kind of on the heart of this bill, because essentially what this bill is asking of MMB is for them to be perfect in their projections. I mean, 5% difference on either side of what they're projecting is a very, very precise calculation. I'm very proud of our department and the work that they do, but that is, in my view, a real impossible situation that you are asking MMB to be a part of. I mean, economies are unpredictable. The world is unpredictable. Things happen that are difficult. People were buying stock on October 23rd, 1929. People were buying houses in 2007. We aren't able as humans to perfectly prepare, perfectly see the future, but we can prepare for the future. And that's why we have the system set up as it currently is. Just for fun, I pulled up the February forecast from 2008, and one of the first sections in big bold, it says a short, mild recession is expected in 2008, which we know was not a short, mild recession and took a lot of planning by our state governments and hard decisions to be made in our budget. And the point that Chair Yochim made earlier is that really important things like education are going to be affected if we're not able to plan for potential emergencies, whether it is federal cuts, whether it is recessions that we don't know the severity of, whether it is a pandemic, we just don't know. And that's part of what we do in budgeting. So all of this is really to the bill author. I mean, do you think it is fair to expect the state government to be able to, without any sort of large reserves for emergencies or planning, precisely get 100% of what our budget estimate is? Do you think that is truly like a reasonable request for MMB, but also generally our state departments?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question. So one of the things that we wanted, it's important to remember, and I actually heard in a previous in workforce is, and I think you mentioned Deed, is the responsibility we put on them to be correct. They told us they were ready and they were correct and they had everything in their control regarding the new paid family medical leave that was gonna bring hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars in costs in, and they said they were perfectly ready to move forward with that. So I think if we're gonna believe that, we have to believe that they're ready to go forward here. One of the things, and if you talk to teachers, and we've heard from school districts, it's not the uncertainty of the economy that is affecting them. It's the uncertainty of knowing what mandates that
Mr. Chair.
Chair Gomez.
We're bringing up grievances from education finance, from workforce. I just think we really want to stay focused on the bill that's in front of us, on the tax implications of it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, thank you, Chair Gomez. Okay, Representative Johnson.
I guess, Mr. Chair, Representative, the representative brought up the fear that schools or education would have regarding this bill when I was bringing up the fact that they're more concerned about other issues and the actions we are taking already on the effect of the education, and that's the mandates and the millions of dollars that is being put on there for funding. So I think that's what they're more concerned about than they are regarding the education part of it. Voters, again, want to know that if there's another surplus, like we had surplus, that they have an opportunity to get the money back to help them out to pay the bills. They saw $18 billion in surplus. They were told that they're going to get thousands of dollars in refunds. That didn't happen. They also received $10 billion in tax increases. They want to have something, and they will decide. They will be the ones voting on this. If they want to have the right that if there is money that is a surplus, again, that will come back to them, and that they know what best to do with their money and not St. Paul and legislators down here. We're giving them the right to be responsible and have a right to use their money to pay for their everyday expenses or whatever investing they want to do, and not have the money to stay down here or new programs be created for more spending.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think you really got to my question that, you know, from a tax perspective, as the Chair said, if we are pigeonholing ourselves to such a tight window without any ability to build up reserves for potential unexpected events of any kind, we are hurting the state's ability to provide services to those very people that you're talking about through our tax system, which funds the services that we provide as a state. So, can I just ask one more time, like, that specifically, that part of your bill, I mean, you use a number, 105% of expected expenditures. Like, that is a very tight window. Do you think that is a fair number? You picked it for your bill. Do you think that's a fair number to place on MMB?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Johnson.
Representative, yes, I do.
Representative Smith.
Okay. That's fair. Good, Chair.
Now I have Norris, Joachim, and then a wrap-up by Chair Gomez, unless there's anybody else here. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Davids, and thank you, Representative Johnson, for bringing this bill forward. Representative Johnson, if I'm reading the bill correctly, to be eligible for a refund under this bill, a taxpayer would have to have either property tax liability or income tax liability. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative. And I can bring in, that is the way I read the bill, correct?
Okay. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Davids, and thank you, Representative Johnson. That's how I read the bill. So to clarify then, let's think about sales tax. So sales tax accounts for about 25%, one quarter of the state's tax collections in a given year. Equates to about $17 billion a biennium. So under this bill, people would not be eligible for a refund based on that fairly sizable sales tax liability. Is that correct?
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative. You are correct. The state, the governor's office, continues to do that too, to put more burden on the sales tax revenue side of it, to bring in revenue for the state. From my understanding of the bill, that it would go back to property tax payers and income tax payers.
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Davids. I guess that has me concerned because you've expressed that one of the main objectives of this bill is to put money back in the pockets of Minnesotans to help defray the costs of daily living. And when I think about the folks who need that assistance in my district, I immediately think of the residents at the Legends of Blaine. This is an affordable senior housing complex. And these are some of the most economically distressed residents in my district. They're already living in what's supposed to be an affordable apartment complex. However, the management company continues to have very steep rent increases every single year that's stretching their budgets. And these residents, thanks to the work that we did in 2023, most of them are probably not paying income tax because they're making under $100,000 a year, and so their Social Security income, which is often for them their only source of income, is exempt from state income tax. They're renters, so they're not paying property tax, and yet, we see that sales tax that they are paying accounts for about 25% of the state's revenue collected each year. So yes, could you explain the policy decision to exclude the residents who are living in the Legends of Blaine and similarly situated residents all throughout the state of Minnesota from getting money back through this bill?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. It's a good question. I mean, you're right. The state continues to rely on sales tax. If you saw the reports that we have, is they're trying, you know, state continues to say how as a percentage, income tax is not as big as a part of the revenue. It's because they are switching that burden to sales tax and counties. You're right. They keep moving that. How that would address the sales tax and those who are underneath the sales tax limit that we discussed here about making totally Social Security tax-free or not taxable, that is a question, one of the things that we have to look at. Do I have a perfect answer for no? But I believe when you look at the amount of people who are paying property taxes, which again is getting to be more and more a part of the way the state moves the money that is spent down here, down to the county and property taxes, and you also have the income taxes. Those are ways that can be used, easily identifiable, and to provide relief back. So yeah, you're correct about the sales tax, but we also have to recognize more and more is going back at property tax levels too, and that will give them a refund or a relief.
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Davis, and thank you, Representative Johnson. I appreciate the honest answer. You know, I have a lot of concerns about this bill, but I guess one of the top concerns would be the fact that I think it's leaving out a lot of folks in my district who need this assistance the most. So thank you, Chair Davis.
Thank you, Representative Norris. Representative Joachim, then Robbins, and then Gomez. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your flexibility for a second question. I'm sorry about that. First of all, Representative Johnson, I want to thank you for your service as a county commissioner. I served on a city council for 9 years, too, and I know how it feels to have things get pushed down from the state level. But we also get some good things from the state level that we key off, and one of those is our bond rating. Representative Johnson, do you know what our bond rating is for the state?
Representative Johnson.
I have heard.
Let's go to research on that for a bond rating. Mr. Clayman or Ms. Templin?
C minus.
Mr. Chair and representatives, I believe the bond rating is AAA, but I can send out a correction if that's not correct.
Okay. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it is AAA for all three of our agency ratings. And we enjoyed that AAA rating at the state, at the city level, because we keyed off that and actually kept investments. Why I'm concerned about that is that Moody's tends to downgrade states that put constitutional amendments like this on that hamper revenue because they're less flexible to find increases in revenue. They have harmful cuts to services, make it harder for a state to recover if there is a downturn. So I am very, very concerned about having our rating go down, plus not having the flexibility to meet our residents' needs, because what I heard at the doors was that folks want investments in our education system, they want investments in affordable housing, they want investments in access to health care, they want their neighbors to do just as well as they do in the economy, and frankly, also relaying this on, I will take this question offline, but commercial and industrial property pay a state general levy as well, so a business could get this tax return. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for being flexible.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. We have Representative Robinson and Gomez to wrap it up. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Johnson, for bringing this bill, and appreciate the discussion today. I was taking notes, and I'm hoping I can remind myself of everything I want to mention, but it seems like a lot of the concern is driven by uncertainty in the economy and things that, you know, have contributed to people's true struggle with affordability. And I would just say to my colleagues that the most of the inflation that we are currently seeing was driven by what was euphemistically called the Inflation Reduction Act, but it was actually the Inflation Acceleration Act, and we are still dealing with that. And also, my colleague who expressed concern about over-reliance on sales tax, I would just like to remind everyone for the record that the colleagues on the other side of the aisle raised the metro sales tax by 1%, which is very regressive. And they also raised several other taxes, the gas tax, tab fees, vehicle registration. So there's been a lot of economic activity that has happened in the last 2 years, and that has contributed to inflation, contributed to making Minnesota's lives more unaffordable. And so I just want to sort of reorient the conversation. We currently have a balanced budget amendment, which I'm very grateful for in the state, and that has not, the requirement that we balance our budget has not hurt our credit rating. It has helped our credit rating. And so I think you are on the right track. I think returning money to Minnesotans when we have a surplus, rather than spending $18 billion of surplus, raising taxes another $11 billion, and driving inflation rather than making life more affordable for Minnesotans is policies we should support. So I really think we need to be focused in this committee on what drives growth, not what drives inflation. So we have done too much of that lately. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And before we go to the wrap-up from Chair Gomez, I think I saw Dassel Cloquedo come in. Where are they? Is that the old Erdahl district back in the day? Are you Chargers?
There's a bunch.
Why do I know that?
Chair.
who else do we have?
Yeah.
No, I didn't even look that one up.
No, that was
no.
Okay.
A couple other schools.
Foley,
okay.
And more coming.
Oh, close.
ACG.
ACG. Alden Conger, Grenada Huntley. Close. Only about 200 miles away.
Yeah.
So, Grove City, that's right. Okay, well, very good. If you could please wrap it up, Chair Gomez.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Johnson and members, for this good discussion. So this is kind of an awkward time to bring this bill forward, isn't it? You know, tucked as we are between two, you know, one economic crisis that we weathered and another that we're kind of in the middle of seeing how it's going to shake out. You know, obviously, as Chair Stevenson talked about last time that we discussed this bill, you know, you weren't in office, Representative Johnson, but, you know, sort of those times of kind of uncertainty and our entire economy shutting down were really unique times to be in these seats, and some that we hope we are never in that kind of situation again. But required extreme flexibility on the part of state government in order to respond to the needs of our constituents. And, you know, we have these looming Trump-Musk cuts. The state receives $2 billion a month in federal funding. And that's mostly through Medicaid, which is for low-income people and people with disabilities and seniors. And education, like Chair Joachim talked about, our youngest Minnesotans. And so, you know, this is really a bill that locks us in, that takes away our ability to respond to crisis, and that sets the stage for future deficits and for cuts to the services that people need. And we just heard from our counties last week, and you were a county commissioner. What happens when the state falls short of its commitment to its residents? What happens? The counties pick up the slack, the schools pick up the slack, and the cities pick up the slack. And so what this is doing is tying us, locking us in to putting our counties, our cities, and our school boards in a position of not having the state support that they need to meet the needs of our residents. This is a really dangerous piece of legislation, which is why I'm really glad that we're passing it out of this committee, because it means it's going nowhere. Because this is not the way that we make policy, through locking ourselves in the Constitution. And, you know, The one other thing about the residents of the Legends of Blaine is, you know, we haven't talked about property tax refunds in this committee yet, Representative Johnson, but there are property tax refunds go to renters too, because renters pay property taxes. Even though they don't receive a bill, they implicitly pay it through their rent. And so when you fill out a property tax refund as a renter, there's an assumption that 17% of the rent that you paid went to pay the property taxes on the property. And so, you know, we talk about controlling costs for people who are struggling, and that's a real concern. We talk about what the impacts are of the current economic order on low-income people, on working-class and middle-class people, and we share those concerns. But this would cut out the very Minnesotans that need the help the most. Pay sales tax? Sorry, you're out. You're a renter and you pay 17% of your rent and property tax? You don't get anything. You work, and but you make so little money, or your refundable tax credits offset your tax liability so that you don't pay taxes in, you're out. This is excluding the people that we want to help the most. But if you're a business that pays property taxes, you can get a check. So just like all of what we've seen so far in this committee, is that this is, we're using the words of, like, we want to help low-income people, we want to help people who are struggling, but that's actually not what this does. I just would say, like, we were all elected by our constituents to be deliberative, to make decisions that are difficult decisions. But we signed up for the task. And we're not going to, and I personally am not in support of just giving away that ability to respond to crisis, whether that is a natural crisis, whether that is a political crisis, or whether it's the cost crisis that's facing families in Minnesota. So I would urge a no vote on House File 4. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, thank you, Chair Gomez. Okay, with that, Representative Joy.
Thank you, Chair Davis. I request a roll call on this.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call. Anything else for the good of the order? The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
David?
Yes.
Joy?
Yes.
Gomez?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Elkins?
No.
Freiberg?
No.
Hansen?
No.
Harder?
Yes.
Herr?
No.
Hewitt?
No.
Johnson?
Yes.
Kozlowski?
No.
Lee?
No.
Roach?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
Schwartz?
Yes.
Smith?
No.
Stevenson?
No.
Swedinsky?
Yes.
Borwas?
Yes.
Wiener?
Yes.
Witte?
Yes.
Guayaquil?
No.
At 12 ayes and 11 nays.
Okay, there being 12 ayes and 11 nays, the bill is passed. On to rules and legislative administration. As amended, then, of course, it would go through the normal process, go to the floor, and then it needs to end up in Ways and Means. We need it to go there, too. So thank you, Representative Johnson. We will now move on, and we will, Representative Robbins, if you could please get ready to present your bill, which is House File 173. So Representative Robbins will move House File 173. Before we get into the Robbins bill, just a couple announcements here. Wednesday's tax committee, that'll be tomorrow. We have a Joy bill, House File 5, and then a Swedinsky bill, House File 9, then a Norris bill, House File 385. And then we go into Thursday, and we have a Davids bill on data centers, and then a Norris bill, property tax abatement for land bank property allowed. That's for this week, and then we'll be working on agendas for the next week. So Representative Robbins moves House File 173 that would be laid over for possible inclusion.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Robbins. Please present your bill.
Thank you, members. I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill. This is, I think, the third time I've presented this bill. And I believe a colleague from previous sessions, Representative Anderson, has carried this bill. Not our current Representative Anderson, former Representative Sarah Anderson. So this bill has been floating around here a long time. And I really hope we can get this done. Members, what this bill does is it provides an option for businesses to take an alternative simplified calculation for the R&D tax credit. Currently, the R&D tax credit is very complicated in Minnesota, and the federal government provides the same alternative simplification my bill proposes, and many other states also provide the simpler version. California, Texas, Iowa, Massachusetts, and Wisconsin, and there may be others since I last did the research, also provide this alternative simplification. It makes it much easier for companies to take advantage of the R&D tax credit, and it's only for research and development that happens in the state of Minnesota. So we're incentivizing companies to do their R&D here rather than in other states where they get the simplified tax credit. And the reason that this simplification is really important is because the old method is 40 years old. So companies have to dig back to calculate the base to what their it's kind of crazy. They have to go all the way back to 1984 and look at what their R&D expenditures were during the years 1984 through 1988 and divide it by their total Minnesota gross receipts from those same 4 years. And then they can calculate the full base. And it's crazy. Most people don't have records going back that far. Records were not necessarily electronic back that far. It's very complicated for companies to take advantage of this credit in Minnesota, and it usually necessitates an audit because the records are not very accessible. And so then they also have to pay for an audit, and it's a very cumbersome thing. So, members, I hope that we all agree that R&D is very important for driving economic growth in our state, and that we should provide, this is just an option. It's an option to provide a simpler way to calculate it that makes it competitive with the states around us. So I hope you will join me in passing this bill today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Just kind of get a lay of the land here. We have, I think we have two proponents who would like to testify, Mr. Brian Cook and Mr. Gavin Hansen. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on behalf of the bill? Is there anyone who wishes to testify with concerns on the bill? Okay, so I think Mr. Cook and Mr. Hansen know what that means, so come on up. And then when we get done with the testimony, I'll ask the department if they'd like to weigh in with any thoughts. Where's the department? Oh, you're way back there. Okay.
They might have an opinion on this one.
That's, and we want that.
All right.
We want that. Kind of exciting, really.
What a concept.
If you think about it. Yeah. Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thanks, Chair Davids, members of the Taxes Committee. My name is Brian Cook. I'm the Director of Tax, Fiscal Policy, and Elections for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Chamber is a statewide organization representing more than 6,300 businesses of all sizes who employ more than 500,000 employees. We support policies that best position our state for future success by advancing a competitive business climate to encourage a growing economy. This morning, I would like to share our support for Representative Robbins' House File 173. Innovation has been an important component of Minnesota's past economic success, and it will be one of the keys for our future. Businesses that innovate and create new products and services tend to be more profitable and stronger than companies that do not. Our members consistently share the importance of the R&D credit and their ability not only to keep R&D jobs here, but to grow their R&D activity in the state. The Chamber is looking forward to having more conversation on the R&D tax credit in coming weeks in this committee. While we've heard from many businesses on the importance of the R&D tax credit, we've also heard from businesses, especially from our small and mid-sized companies, on the difficulties of calculating the credit. As Representative Robbins explained, under current law, the base year for the calculation of many companies is from 1984 to 1988. So for example, if a 40-year-old company with R&D activities and sales tax revenue from that period wants to claim R&D tax credits in 2025, company would have to look back to records from 37 years ago to properly calculate and claim the R&D tax credit. I think those records would be older than some of the members of the committee. This task can be extremely difficult and burdensome. page 8 of the 2017 OLA Minnesota Research Tax Credit Report can give you more of a visual on the complexity. Representative Robbins addresses this issue by having Minnesota join other states like California, Iowa, and Massachusetts in providing an alternative method similar to the federal alternative calculation that was enacted in 2006. By providing this alternative calculation, many taxpayers can begin claiming the research credit for the first time or to increase the amount of credit claimed, which was the experience at the federal level. This will be especially helpful to many small and mid-sized companies and manufacturing industries and high-growth industries such as pharmaceuticals and software. So appreciate your time this morning. Look forward to the continued conversation on the research and development credit this session.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. We'll now go to Mr. Hansen.
Chair Davids and members of the committee, my name is, thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 173. My name is Gavin Hansen and I serve as the Fiscal and Economic Policy Director for the Minnesota Business Partnership. MBP represents over 100 business leaders and executives whose companies collectively employ nearly 500,000 Minnesotans across a wide range of industries, making significant contributions to America's headquarters economy. Minnesota is uniquely positioned to be a national leader in research and development. With world-class institutions like the University of Minnesota and the Mayo Clinic, alongside a dynamic group of companies driving innovation in medical technology, manufacturing, aerospace, power sport vehicles, and food sciences, our state has a strong foundation for R&D. According to the Department of Employment and Economic Development, Minnesota ranks first in medical device patents per capita, second in food patents, and third in health patents, a testament to the innovation happening right here. Minnesota was a pioneer in R&D tax policy, becoming the first state in the nation to adopt the R&D credit in 1981. Since then, 35 other states have implemented their own versions, and unfortunately, Minnesota has fallen behind its peers. However, there is renewed momentum to reclaim our leadership in R&D. With the rise of MedTech 3.0, Governor Walz prioritizing research and development in his latest budget and his ongoing trade mission to Belgium, where he is actively discussing R&D opportunities with global companies, it's clear that the time to act is now. House File 173 takes a critical step towards simplifying and expanding the R&D credit, making it more accessible to businesses across Minnesota. Strengthening this credit will not only drive job growth in some of the most sought-after fields in the country, but also retain thousands of high-quality jobs already established here. At the Minnesota Business Partnership, we support policies that drive growth across the entire state, and few initiatives have the potential to do so as effectively as investing in research and development. If the Minnesota legislature prioritizes R&D, we can once again position our state as the nation's epicenter of innovation. Thank you for your time and consideration. I urge the committee to support House File 173. Thank you.
Thank you. Any question for the witnesses before we go to the author? Questions for Mr. Cook or Mr. Hansen? Okay. Questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Questions for the author? Okay, with that, any wrap-up comments? Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The time has come. We were the leader on R&D tax credit in 1981, and we have fallen behind, so it is time to make ourselves as competitive as our neighboring states to make sure that world-class research is being done in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, and I apologize. I should have gone first to Chair Gomez for some wrap-up comments, so you can wrap up again if you'd like.
You need to wrap up after me, that's cool too.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Robbins. So yeah, this is we joined the legislature at the same time.
Yes.
We've served on the tax committee together now for 6 years. This is going to be our seventh year together. I think it must have been our second week in tax committee when Chair Marquardt was still Chair Marquardt. We received the OLA's presentation on this tax credit. So you've brought forward modifications to it three times. This is the third time. Each time I've asked, how are we addressing the concerns from that 2017 OLA report? You're now the chair of a committee where you make use of the OLA's information all the time. And so we're gonna go back again to the 2017 evaluation. And what it says is that, first of all, this tax does not pay for itself. This tax has an ill-defined purpose. Since 2017, they've been asking somebody, anybody, tell us what this is supposed to do so that we can figure out if it does what it's supposed to do. But there's no purpose statement. There's no intent laid out in the language that you have before us, just as every time this comes forward, there's that basic concern. This is, you're proposing to add $200 million over the budget window to this program, additionally, on top of what it is already, and we can't even say what it's supposed to do. So they make an assumption. They say, okay, well, in the OLA report, it's supposed to create jobs, supposed to spur innovation. What it concludes is that it doesn't pay for itself. The further, what it shows is that this, 67% of the money in this go to C corporations. On average, the largest 20% of C corporations measured by national sales, so that means the largest corporations in the world, receive two-thirds of the tax credit claimed by C corps. And so again, Mr. Chair, I mean, this is being laid over, I assume?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what we have before us yet again, right, is we're saying we care about costs. We care about you know, getting money in the pocketbooks of Minnesotans. But what are the budgetary items? I don't think that's funny, but okay. What are the budgetary items that we've laid over in this committee so far? This is going to be our second one. The first one was for multimillionaires. The first one was ultimately $500 million a biennium for multimillionaires, a tax cut for them. So now we have a corporate tax giveaway that we're adding to the tune of $200 million over the budget window. And so as I said, don't take us at our word. Notice what we do. Notice what we do. Notice who we fight for. We haven't heard anything about property tax refunds. We haven't heard anything about the renter's rebate. We haven't heard anything about the child tax credit. We haven't heard anything about the many programs that we have in the tax committee that do actually help lower income people afford their lives, that would actually help individuals in our districts, that would help the people at the Legends of Blaine. But instead, we have $1 billion, basically, or $750 million of proposals that are being laid over that go to multimillionaires and the biggest corporations in the world. And, you know, I mean, if that's what you want to do in the tax bill, then we're going to have an interesting end of session. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, tax committee is always interesting.
Indeed it is.
That's good. Okay, so I was remiss. Let's go to the department, see if they'd like to get in this one. No? Okay. Okay, thank you. A final wrap-up, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So I would hate to contradict Chair Gomez, but I was not actually a member of the tax committee our freshman year. I just came as a guest to present this bill. So I've only been part of this august body for two terms. But during that time, I've learned a lot, and I appreciate the OLA's work. As you noted, I think their office does fantastic work. And I would say the reason that the OLA report is still relevant from 2017 and then an update she did in 2019 is because we haven't changed the law. The tax cut doesn't pay for itself because nobody can use it. If we implement the simplification and people can actually start using it, that will drive economic growth that will pay for the tax cut. So we're still at the status quo because we've not changed the law. And if it would help Chair Gomez to add a purpose statement, I would happily do that. Because the purpose of this bill is to drive economic growth by ensuring that research and development stays done in Minnesota. Yes, a lot of corporations take advantage of this. A lot of startups would take advantage of it if it was simpler. And they have the choice to do their R&D. The big corporations can do their R&D anywhere. They have offices and plants and research facilities all over the country. We are incentivizing them to go pick California, Texas, Iowa, Massachusetts, or Wisconsin to do their R&D because we make it so hard to do it here. So if we want to drive growth in Minnesota, we need to drive research and development here that will drive new jobs, new innovations, and keep really high-paying, highly educated people that we are educating at the University of Minnesota here. So members, I think this, in the long run, we're all dead, Mr. Chairman. But in the, not directed at you, I just know you've said that before.
Some sooner than others.
But in the long run, Mr. Chair, we will see that this tax credit pays for itself. We just have to make it usable, and it is not usable in its current. So I urge the committee to include this in the final version of the bill. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Representative Robbins renews her motion that House File 173 be laid over for possible inclusion in what's going to be an awesome omnibus tax bill. I can just feel it. So it is laid over for possible inclusion. Okay, anything else for the good of the order? Thank you, members, for your work today. Really appreciate it. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.